Blog Talk Radio.
Rivetti, what's up?
I'm sorry, sir. It's just a difference of opinion that got out of hand.
What about?
It's really too silly to talk about, sir. I'd rather just forget about it.
I don't give a damn about what you'd rather forget about. Why were you two fighting?
Well, I said that the Kirby Silver Surfer was the only real Silver Surfer, and that the Mobius Silver Surfer was shit. And Benefield's a big Mobius fan, and things got out of hand. I pushed him, he pushed me. I lost my head, sir. I'm sorry.
Rivetti, you're a supervisor. You can get a commission like that.
I know it, sir. You're 100% right. It's never happened again.
It better not happen again. I see this kind of nonsense, I'm going to write you up. You understand? Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
You have to set an example even in the face of stupidity. Now, everybody that reads comic books knows that Kirby Silver Surfer is the only true Silver Surfer. Now, am I right or wrong?
You're right, sir.
All right. Get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, folks. Welcome. This is the Grindhouse, Grindhouse Saturdays, a belated post-Thanksgiving to you. Happy Thanksgiving to you. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. The gang is all here. Captain Kirk, Daryl B., and myself, the indefatigable Afro Nerd. Let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove, folks. This is new. This is by a group. Actually, I should be more correct. It is a compilation CD, free download, available on, just Google this. I'll give the information momentarily. The name of the CD is called Torrents International. So you know this is definitely a nerdcore group. Torrents International. The jam is called Mathematics, featuring Ruckus, Kloppin' Pop, and Cosplay. We'll be back in a few moments, and again, let's groove.
Consumer politics to a room full of college kids sniffing glue in offices. They'll assume I'm not a prick, I'm a madman living in Afghan, kidnapping your fat nan and chucking that bitch in the black van. Come to me, on the knee, company wife two, meet number three, sipping the Jack Dan. I'll shit in my hat, man, and I'll wear it before I do a chick in the back, man. And I'll sweat, no, I'm lying, I ain't shy, I get lost, but who am I, a giver? I'll drag her by a dreadlocks and do her by the river. Let's make romance, child, shake hands, I'll smash your brave band. I slap her face and smile to a caveman style. Alcohol and crack addicts, Neanderthal, pick up the mask, all the math man.
I've got the mathematics,
math
man. Hiding bodies in the attic. I got the mathematics,
math
man. Hiding bodies in the attic. I got the mathematics,
math
man. Hiding bodies in the attic. I got the mathematics,
math man.
Ago, this one guy was gunning for my life. It was one in the morning, walking down 59th. He was sticking mad close, like two hicks on a six-pack. 5 seconds later, I had three of his ribs cracked. Gave him five across the face and he ate the ground. Nine kicks from my side seven while he was down. 9 to 3 yards, I was walking away. But before I got to it, he pulled out his 38 and said, before I put six rounds into your chest, get into the 6-4, then I saw the 33 on his neck. Luminati, that was was 8 years ago. I only made the 32nd before I left the chateau. 79 micrograms of BTX to incapacitate the guards and leave the complex. Now I'm 50 years old and this night won't be traumatic, cause I got two more syringes and some space in my attic.
All right. Okay, enough of that. Once a game that was torrents, like the file sharing, like the file sharing reference, Torrents International Mathematics. Folks, this is the Grindhouse. Listen up. We have the comic shop at 6 p.m., of course, and at 7 p.m., we're expecting a Ms. Rachel DeCoste from Canada. She's going to talk about racism in Canada after the young man Orville Douglas, if you recollect. Orville Douglas caused somewhat of a internet sensation or internet controversy because he wrote a op-ed piece entitled "I Hate Being a Black Man." So because of that, and being that Mr. Douglas resides in Canada, he highlighted his feelings on being an African-American, or let me not be so ethnocentric, Afro-Canadian, and what it's like to be a black person in Canada. And she also has her say as well, courtesy of her HuffPost piece. So she'll be coming up at around 7:07, 7:08 in the next show, the Afternoon Show. All right, but we have the comic shop to get it to, so let's get into it. Captain, you're needed in engineering once again. Let's get to it.
I actually like that record that you were playing. Yes, I like that record.
Yeah, it's pretty tight. It's pretty tight, and that's definitely a nerdcore groove. It's a nerdcore website, so once I get the information, I'll definitely give it to our listeners. And, of course, we have our incredible, amazing, indefatigable – I'm trying to think of all the comic book phrases for Daryl B. Let's get to Daryl B.
We'll just leave it at uncanny, but rest in peace, Al Plastino. Thank you for creating or helping to create Legion of Superheroes. I'm forever in your debt for that.
You know, he would have a good name, Uncanny Darby. That's going to be your – that's it, Uncanny. That's it, man.
That's
oh, wow.
It.
All right. That's it? It's been decreed. All right, listen, folks, we have a lot to get into. Let's try our best. Of course, 646-915-9620 is the call-in number. Feel free to give us your protestations, your questions, or – just, you know, your additions to the conversation. So, first up, gentlemen, I want to talk about Aquaman. I know Daryl knows about this thing because it was definitely a goof for a couple of years on Entourage. HBO's Entourage, Marky Mark's Entourage, always made reference to this Aquaman film and how one of the lead characters, I think Adrian Grenier, that actor, he was always up for playing Aquaman. Now that Jeff Johns has pretty much straightened out the Aquaman character, you know, Aquaman has always been treated as a goof, if it's not from just Entourage, but preceding Entourage, he's the guy that talks to fish and doesn't really have a power set. We remember him from Super Friends, so he's never treated seriously. Now there's talk on the part of the WB that they may consider an Aquaman film. Daryl, what do you know about this? How serious do you think this is? And why Aquaman before, let's say a Wonder Woman?
It's the WB. So you take everything with a grain of salt until you actually see something in front of you. You know, that's the way I look at it. Hey, again, I will still stress this. I never liked how Aquaman was portrayed in Super Friends because it tarnished the character to me. All right, to me, reading the books, reading it, Aquaman is a serious character. All right, and the jokes that the mainstream had about him, oh, he only talks to fish. I'm like, okay, that's cool. You realize the water makes up 75% of the Earth's surface, right? You realize that he controls all of that, right? So make your jokes. But say a city sinks into the ocean, hi, San Diego, looking at you. You're now in his realm. Let's see you crack your jokes then. But it would make for a great fantasy movie. You know, Under the Water, Atlantis, politics, you know, but people never think about that. They think about the jokes. So, hey, CW, Warner Brothers, DC, your whole family over there, all right, just keep this in mind. It was the number one show on iTunes, the Aquaman pilot. People were interested in it, okay? If you do a JLA, it's hard for me to think of a JLA without Aquaman. Again, if you're from the Super Friends generation, you're cracking jokes. Aquaman, oh, that's not good, that's not good. But me, with my sensibilities, thinking logically, all right, this is a very important hero, all right? And I know we credit Geoff Johns with it, but I have to think back to Busick and Grant Morrison and I forget who was in the middle. There was one more writer, Peter David. They took Aquaman and they added this ear of royalty, nobility, and gave him a seriousness that I would love to see expressed on film, you know. But again, that's the and Captain will probably get into it. Certain characters get a stigma attached to them, and it's hard to shake. And we should know it because for the longest we heard comic book movies wouldn't work on film, and look now. You know, that's what I say. Cap, you're up.
Well, this is what I think. I agree with you definitely. He's very important, especially when you're dealing with JLA. But I think a Wonder Woman movie should come first, and he's introduced. Give him about 10 minutes or 8 minutes in there, and then afterwards you go drop his movie. That's what I think. That helps. That helps undo some of the damage, the negative memes that we have out there with the older folks. The 35 and up people, not so much the younger people, the 35 and up people. Now, they will say, you know, that's not necessarily the large movie-going audience. But I would say when it comes to these superhero movies, you get everything. You get the young and you get the old because a lot of people, older people, are very nostalgic with a lot of these characters. And also, some of them are still into it. They're still into the comic books. So I just think that's the way it should be done. I don't think this should come before a Wonder Woman movie. I think a Wonder Woman should come first and give them about 10 minutes in there. Then you could go ahead and go do that. Play around with it and see what happens. That's all. Back over to you, Seraphim Nerd.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you have to admit that the Super Friends really did a great deal of damage with, I mean, it was a children's show, but he was riding a seahorse, for Christ's sake. And the telepathy with the fish, I mean, it made it seem as if, you know, once he's on land, he's powerless. And the funny thing is, and I'm going to open this up even more, is that Submariner came before Aquaman. And Submariner has never been perceived that way. I mean, again, he's a timely character, and then in the 60s he became a Marvel character. Timely and Marvel were the same company, essentially. But with Geoff Johns' reboot of the Aquaman character, Aquaman is selling. You know, he's actually interesting. I don't know the last time I picked up an Aquaman book, but I've been picking up this line. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they shored up his power set and also his mythology. Daryl, you might want to even go into that a little bit. I mean, they really touched more on, well, first of all, have they ever Aquaman to Wonder Woman with, let's say, Poseidon, that kind of thing? Is there any connection between Wonder Woman and Aquaman with the mythologies, with the Greek mythologies?
The only time they did that or made allusions to that in the books was the George Perez War, I think it was War of the Gods. War of the Gods, which was a pseudo-crossover in the 80s. That's the only time. They have made plenty of connections between Arthur and Donna as true to time, being A, either romantically linked or politically linked, as seeing as how he's king and she's a princess. They've done that. They've done it in the political arena. They've done it in the romantic arena. And that's where what Cap says makes sense. You could use a Wonder Woman film to show a pantheon and have him be a part of the pantheon of rulers, mythical rulers in the DC universe. You could do something like that. The problem with that being is, hey, we kind of need the Wonder Woman film. You can use it as a window to get to Aquaman, but the problem is, we need to get together on the Wonder Woman film. That's why I said, when I see it, I'll believe it, Warner Brothers. Back to you, Afrinert.
Yeah, I think that if they do a really decent Aquaman film, it has to be very good, though, that it will definitely knock off any talk of it, of him being a joke. That film has to really kick ass in order to assuage any of the past perceptions of Aquaman really being a lower tier character. I mean, with this recent turn on Aquaman, I mean, this guy's flying, jumping around like the Hulk somewhat. He's able to toss trucks. He's lifting trucks with his Triton. I mean, he's coming off very Prince Namor-ish. So. And also, actually, what about a Prince? Do you think a Prince Namor film will fare better? I mean, even Prince Namor's look is more threatening. He's got wings on his feet. He's got pointy ears. I mean, there's a whole thing with this guy. He's angry all the time.
Well, I think the next Fantastic Four movie, they've talked about, we can't use Doctor Doom. I'm thinking that the next Fantastic Four movie might be with Namor.
Namor?
It might be an Atlantis-type thing,
But does Fox own that, or is that under Marvel or Fox?
I don't know. I don't know who has the rights to the characters, because Namor is equally in the Fantastic Four side as well as the Avengers side. Because with the Avengers, you got to think the Invaders, Captain America, you got stuff there. But on the Fantastic Four side, just remember, you got Atuma, you got his connections with the X-Men, which is also under the Fox umbrella. That's what it is. He's one of those characters that may appear on that shared list. For the fans out there, there's been talk with the recent thing with Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, how they could be in equally both camps. The mutants that is owned by Fox, or rights controlled by Fox, and the Avengers with which is solely controlled by Marvel Studios, of characters that can be used by both. All right, so that's the agreement they came under. I could see Namor falling into that because he technically belongs in both. He's a universal character, just like Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, just like to a point Magneto, just like to a point Beast. There's certain characters that are going to be able to belong to both houses. You just have to consult the other about how you're going to use them. They can't block you from using them. So I could see Namor ended up Fantastic Four. I could see Namor ending up in Marvel Studios, too.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
Something
I was just,
to keep an eye on.
I was just thinking about it as I was saying it, that in recent years, Namor has adopted more of the mutant tagline. I mean, he's been called the world's oldest mutant, which is really not accurate, but he's the world's oldest mutant in print. But in mythology, who's that? That's Apocalypse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for the sake of a tagline, he has been called the world's oldest mutant. So if that's the case, I'm surprised he hasn't shown up in an X-Men film. It would be interesting, but I really wouldn't want Fox to do it
but he's also been an Avenger. So we'll see how this works out. I haven't really heard that much about there being a Prince Namor film. I know it's in development or in writer's hell. So we'll see. But I guess we got to get past the Aquaman thing. Could be, you know, I guess it could dovetail in kind of a Lord of the Rings kind of thing, too. It could be a Lord of the Rings underwater, if done the right. I don't know if we've even seen anything like that. Not really. So, again, that could be something that would be really interesting if done right. Keyword right. All right. Moving along, I want to turn things around a little bit with the recent deaths of two beloved characters in pop culture, pop/pulp. Brian the Dog from The Family Guy, no longer on TV per se until he's brought back. We'll see how that works. But a rather graphic death for a comedy cartoon. And then Detective Carter from Person of Interest, who I really dug on that show. I was somewhat surprised to see that Taraji P. Henson, the actress, that I believe she just had a 3-year deal, or I think she wanted it to be just 3 years. So it's a popular show. I don't know why she wouldn't want to ride that show till the wheels came off. But, Captain, what are your thoughts about these two deaths? I mean, actually, Brian the Dog, again, this is a fictional character, but there's quite a few folks on the Internet that were pretty vocal about bringing this character back. Like, you know, they just did not want him to die.
Well, in that type of realm, you store words. You know, you could bring them back after a little while. You could figure it out, you know, as far as that realm is concerned, you know? You know, so, you know, I see what they were trying to do there a little bit, shake up the waters, let's move past it. And then if it doesn't work in that realm, all right, maybe they can bring them back. Now, we're dealing with the Person of Interest situation. You're dealing with a whole different situation. Let me get into this a little bit. With this show, I have to do a little background. You have to suspend belief. You have to watch it more or less like you're watching wrestling. Wrestling is big. WWE is huge. But you're in on all the shenanigans. You realize that it is a show and you have great characters and you just play along. So with watching Person of Interest, you can't be too pragmatic. That's not going to work. Because if you are, you end up doing like me. The first season, I stopped watching the show because I had the show totally figured out. Because from my mindset, typical mindset, it doesn't make any sense. The gung-ho cop and everything else, what the lead character was doing, Jim Azizel, didn't make any sense whatsoever. And I personally felt that she should have been murdered in the second season based on the way the writing was going. But now, after you suspend belief, you can totally enjoy the show because the show is very magnetic. It draws you in. They have great characters. And even this little character here now, you know, the little 100-pound woman that's helping them out, she's doing amazing stuff. She's beating up all these guys. Come on now already, man. She should have gotten shot, to tell you the truth. They could have kept her character going a bit longer. It could be a bit traumatic to the, you know, the constant viewer of the show. But, you know, it is what it is, man. At this level, just totally, it is what it is with this man. I did enjoy her character. I definitely did enjoy the character, even though I had to suspend belief. But I did enjoy the character, and I thought the characters on the show are very good, very well done, and the show has a very magnetic appeal. Now let's see what happens going forward. Now that she's not there, back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, to be devil's advocate, though, wasn't there a recent news report that said that there have been several recruits, I believe, in the armed forces, female recruits that have actually passed the rather harsh and difficult combat test to be on the front line. So there is this thing of women being able to pass these really difficult physical endeavors. So, you know, listen, we're seeing more and more women being able to kind of come to the front when it comes to physical prowess. But
still you see these waifs like Angelina Jolie. I've seen pictures of her ankles look like pool cues. Listen, there's only so much belief you can suspend, but I guess my problems are with Ms. Henson's minority representation. I feel that she was a positive force on primetime television, and you know on the other show on the other side at 7 o'clock on AfroNerd, we always talk about minstrelsy. I didn't perceive her character to be a minstrel by any stretch of the imagination, so I get a little bit queasy when good characters of color meet their demise. So that's one aspect of it. But I will say this. As much as I did not necessarily like her demise, there's a point in the show at the top of season 3, Captain, I think I might have mentioned to you, it was starting to go into a campy thing. Just season 3. But for whatever reason, season 1 and season 2 were okay for me. But at season 3, the gang's all here. Everybody's, your bullets are going everywhere. And, you know, bang, 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 the bad guy's dead. I said, okay, we can't keep on doing this. So with her death and her being able to take down this clandestine, dirty cop cabal, seeing that done and how she kind of had to die in order for, and also, you know, everybody got banged up in the last couple of episodes. So when you saw that, fingers are being broken, people are getting tortured, I said, okay. Because so far, I'm looking at I mention this quite a bit all the time, Captain. The Blacklist, when you see what they do, they're going hard for season 1. Hard season 1. So this is almost Person of Interest is almost channeling them. I don't even know how harder. I mean, all you can go is down from where the Blacklist is now from season 1. Season 1 is completely gritty. I don't really see any flaws of that show right now, in my opinion. Dal, any thoughts on the deaths of Brian the Dog and Detective Carter?
All right, you guys covered Person of Interest. I'll cover the one that's in my arena. Let me go with Brian. All I could tell to Family Guy friends is he told you so. Seth MacFarlane at San Diego Comic-Con said there would be a major death this season. All right? In my mind, I already got the loophole to bring him back. And if you pay close attention to that scene, I would tell folks, pay attention to the car that hit Brian. Just go ahead and take a look at the car that hit Brian. It should look awfully familiar. All right? I know the time machine got destroyed. It's Stewie. He could probably build another one. But I will say this. Family Guy handled the death scene well. They did not take it as a joke, all right? That was well done. Like similar to the Maud Flanders death scene in Simpsons, where you're playing jokes, but you had you have little one-offs, but you saw the true emotion there of losing a beloved family member. And Family Guy's played with that concept before. And Stewie's reactions were just about perfect. Because see any kid that bonds with a pet and has that pet die on them. And see you go through all the phases, anger, confusion, sadness, you know. Stewie went through all of that, all right? And eventually he got to have acceptance. It's Stewie, all right? I don't see him accepting it for too long. I see him building another time machine and getting Brian back. But I will say they did a bang-up job. As many criticisms I've had of the show, of the way they've dealt with serious issues, you know what? They handled this one just about as pitch-perfect as a show like Family Guy can do. And you know what? Rest in peace, Brian, until the season end, the way you'll be brought back. Back to you, Afro-Man.
Yeah, I'm curious about that because, you know, the way that particular episode went, Daryl, Stewie tried to build that time machine, but he was unable to get the materials.
So
yeah,
it came off as if it was a kind of a finality to it. It came off that way, and then it introduced this other character, this Italian American dog with the Italian aspect.
Vinny,
I recognize the voice. Who is the voice? I recognize the voice.
I was going to think it was one of the mob actors that we see a lot, because that's who the voice sounded like. Like, shoot.
Maybe it's Joe Mantegna?
I don't know.
From Criminal Minds? I don't know. I'll look it up, but I mean, it sounded like, I definitely recognize that voice. Definitely a well-known Italian-American actor.
But we'll see. Like I said, we're comic book fans. We're conditioned to whenever there's a cartoon and a death like this, we're already conditioned. All right, here are the ways I see that they could bring him back. All right? But, and again, it's me. I pour over the news from stuff like San Diego Comic-Con and thing. I pour over it endlessly. And I remember, when I'm watching this show, I remembered Seth MacFarlane said at Comic-Con, get ready, a character is not going to make it through the season. A character will die. You know, that's what he said. So, hey, those people unprepared for it, I feel sorry for you, but get ready, buckle up. This may be a fun ride, and we'll see how well we tolerate Vinny.
That's just, I will say this much as far as what happens on the business side, as far as reality versus what happened on that show. The reality is that I think there were some words going out about the show's ratings going down, or there was a kind of a diminution in interest in the show. So I think they, you know, once they did this, voila, instant rating. So I think that's the core. Now, they had to, like the captain just said, they had to shake things up. It seems a little bit contrived, but this is what they have to do. These guys are, you know, pretty slick nowadays in doing certain things to regain the public's interest. Now everyone's talking about Brian, where before they didn't talk about him. So I agree with you. We'll see how it turns out. One more thing. Wasn't there supposed to be a crossover between The Simpsons and Family Guy? Is
coming
this season?
Coming up later this season. That and a Simpsons Futurama thing coming up later this season.
Should be good.
Should be interesting. All right, gentlemen, let's go to a quick Nerdcore group. When we get back, I want to talk about Comic Book Fans International. There was a Al Jazeera piece a few days ago that talked about these comic book conventions in Bangladesh. I think that's pretty fascinating. There's actually a photograph, if you go to our AfroNerd Radio site, AfroNerdRadio.com, as you're listening and you see the scrolling photographs or scrolling pictures that are commensurate with what we're talking about. There's a picture of fans from Bangladesh at a comic convention, not unlike the convention that Daryl and myself attended a few months ago at New York Comic Con. So I'm intrigued about Islamic fans. What does that mean? This is further westernization. I mean, you see a Muslim gentleman with a costume on, a Western costume. There's a costume of these guys. They're in Wolverine costumes. I mean, hopefully this kind of assuages, you know, what the stereotype is. So I'm just intrigued about the power of comic books. I mean, the fact that, you know, these books are being, I mean, you have collectors now. They're really getting a hold of comic books in Bangladesh. All right, we'll be right back. This is the great Adam Warrock, folks. Days of Future Past. This is the name of the jam, so he's right on time with his music. We'll be right back. Let's move.
Please. We need you to hope again.
Power came to beckon when the time stream is messed with. My past could catch up quickly.
Again, that was Adam Warrock, Days of Future Past. So he's already on top of this thing with next year's Days of Future Past movie, the fourth X-Men movie. So that should be pretty interesting. All right, folks, again, we're about 8 minutes past the midway point. We are expecting at the 7 o'clock show, Afternoon Radio, Ms. Rachel DeCoste. She'll be coming through to discuss race and Afro-Canadians, just what it's like to be a black person living in Canada. So I'm pretty sure she might dispel some of our preconceptions. All right, folks, back into the vault. We're talking about comic books and pulp culture, of course, on this show at the Comic Shop. I have, of course, Daryl B. and the indefatigable Captain Kirk. Gentlemen, you know, I came across this piece. I just was intrigued by it. It was courtesy of Al Jazeera. And they were talking about this growing interest, I mean a real growing interest in comic book culture, pulp culture, in Bangladesh. Now, in just doing a cursory research on Bangladesh, I mean my knowledge of Bangladesh is that it's overwhelmingly an Islamic country, although it's not completely the case, but it is overwhelmingly Islamic, independent from Pakistan. But it's an impoverished country, but I'm also reading that it is, they're actually getting a handle on some of their poverty, that it's the economy is actually growing. So maybe with the growing economy, they could indulge with these folks putting on Wolverine costumes. But I was just intrigued that that's the last place I would think that they would actually have comic book conventions. So now, comic book conventions are piercing the Middle East, South Asia. So what are your thoughts on this, Daryl? I mean, you know, I love that our culture is becoming international, but it's one thing to think about hip-hop. It's another thing to think about, again, when you look at this picture, you see these guys you see a gentleman with a Punisher T-shirt on. You see three guys with Wolverine claws and their hair done up like Wolverine. And I think I see Scorpion from Mortal Kombat in the background. I mean, this is no different than what's happening in New York or in San Diego, in Bangladesh. Your thoughts?
Well, I often said it. The comic book medium is infinite in its capacity to tell a story, to relay a concept and just even relay news. All right, I tell this story often to people. When I was a kid, I scored A's in history, or I had hundreds in history class. Why? When I was a kid, because I had two comic books that was extensive on the American Revolution and the Civil War. I learned, and I don't recommend this to everybody, but I read the textbooks. But the things that made it stick in my head, some of the facts and stuff, was reading those comic books. Because I pictured the comics that I just read while taking the test, you know? So to connect that to what I'm saying here, is any culture can use the comic medium to tell a tale. Any culture can find morals or find common ground in comic books. You know, this is a great sign for us, all right? It just further disproves that, oh, it's not a secular society. It's a society where you can have fun. It's a society where you can increase knowledge, you know? So kudos to all our new fans in Bangladesh, all right? Kudos to the fans in Asia. Kudos to fans Muslim, Hindu, you know, just go through the gamut, because you can use this as a medium. That's why anytime you see anything where this comic disrespects us, if you feel disrespected by it, make your own comic. It's easy. Go ahead, just express your opinion that way. You don't have to order hits on cartoonists. You don't have to, you know, you could say, this was wrong and this offended me. But you know what? Here comes our response. You know, it's an open medium. It's just like anything else. It's just like a news report. It's just like music. It's just like film. It's just like TV. True comic books, you could convey anything. And likewise, comic book characters can be twisted, turned, and it could fit anything, you know? You brought up our fan dressed up as the Punisher. You could look at the Punisher as a vigilante. You could look at him as a representation of society that can't take no more. You could look at him as a symbol of how the legal system is failing. You know, that's one character that you turn, and you could fit a variety of topics. And I was amiss from saying he could also affect our changing views in regards to violence. You know, on both sides, you could look at Punisher that way. But that's one character that could be turned to however you look at it. And it's also further proof that, hey, comic book films, they reach out. Everybody's got a computer now, or everybody could get access to a computer now, even these countries. They see these on film, and all of a sudden they go to a bookshop or something, and, hey, there they are on page. Let me take a look at it. And you get hooked. So, like I said, welcome to the new fans to the medium. I hope you enjoy your visit. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, before I give the mic to the captain, there's a couple other things, because we like to give as much information as we can to our audience. Again, folks, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afro-Nerd Radio. You know, when you do a little bit of research on Bangladesh, what you find out, I mean, again, my limited knowledge of the country, I was always under the impression that Bangladesh was really, really, really an impoverished nation. But it appears to truly be on the come up, because, you know, comic collecting is not cheap. You know, comics are, especially in this time, it's one thing that, you know, during the 30s and 40s, all the way to the 60s, comics were 10 cents. Now a comic book can cost you anywhere from $2.99 to $30, you know, if you get a trade paperback. And then when you factor in the collectability of comic books, the comic book can cost you millions.
Not just millions, plural. So to endeavor in this hobby, it is definitely a Western phenomenon as far as the approach. I mean, it's when you factor in the toys and the publications and the movies, it is a rich man's hobby to a certain degree. But with Bangladesh, what you hear about it, though, is that it's considered a next 11 country or an N11 country, which means this is where you start to find out what's going on here. There are several countries, well, in this case, 11 countries, that are essentially have been deemed to be on the come up: Turkey, South Korea, Vietnam, Egypt, Mexico, so forth. And they were identified by Goldman Sachs as having high potential for becoming one of the largest economies in the 21st century. So it's really going by how these countries are tracking. So I'm thinking that this explains how Bangladesh can have its own comic book convention. Actually, this is the third comic book convention they've had, because essentially, ladies and gentlemen, Bangladesh is on the come up. So, heck, I've got to see, does Nigeria have a comic book convention? I mean, heck, I would like to see that. Now, we know that London, we know that England has comic book conventions, and Spain, but those are westernized countries. But, again, Bangladesh is on the come up. Let me read this quickly from Al Jazeera, and I'll pass the mic to the captain. It says, in Bangladesh, where 4 out of 10 people are illiterate and the annual per capita income is only about $1,000, spending money on comic books has never been a high priority. But that has changed over the past 3 years as a growing number of Bangladeshis are buying and reading English and Bengali comic books. 24-year-old Farhan Mahmoud Akash, a business student at a private university in Dhaka, says he can now buy issues of Batman or Hawkeye in the Bangladeshi capital just a few weeks after they are released in North America. In the past, Akash had bought secondhand comics from used bookstores. Still, I could not follow my favorite titles regularly, he said. Also, most of these issues were from the 80s or 90s. The situation for readers like Mahmoud changed rapidly after stores began importing comics from top Western publishers like DC, Marvel, Icon, and Vertigo, and selling them in Dhaka. Captain, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, this is still, a poor country, but they appear to be in a certain trajectory.
Well, essentially, you and Dow pretty much hit all the points. There's nothing really to add to take away at this given point. You know, anything that I would say now would actually do an injustice to what you and Daryl said. So I will leave this alone at this given time. Well said by the both of you. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
All right. Going into another direction once again. Actually, I want to talk about, and we've probably touched on this subject of, I don't know, maybe every show on some level, but for some reason I was intrigued. I was looking at one of my sneakers. Captain, I had some sneakers customized a few years back, and actually those sneakers are available for purchase at punkyourchucks.com. So I actually had a pair of sneakers that were, I think I have them on Facebook also, but again, if you go to Punk Your Chucks and just put in Black Avengers, I had some Chuck Taylors customized to have Black Marvel characters on both sneakers with under the title Black Avengers. So I'm looking at the sneakers now, and I have Storm, I have Black Panther, I have War Machine, you name it. So I was just thinking how easy it was for me to pretty much come up with Black characters from Marvel to put on a shoe. And I said, okay, my next shoe that I will make will be a Black JLA. But then I sat there and I said, you know something? I kind of had to think a lot harder for DC as far as diversity. I can only think of one Black female JLA member, and that's Vixen. And I like the fact I was very meticulous with my sneakers, where I had Misty Knight is on my sneaker as well as Storm. I don't want to have a whole bunch of guys in my sneaker and just one Black female. And so Daryl, the question basically is, who's better at diversity, Marvel or DC? And
oh, hands down, better at diversity is Marvel. All right, and I've gotten into this argument with a couple of people, and I'll say it like this. All right, what is DC's most popular franchise? All right, and of course the answer is the Batman franchise. And anytime I bring that up, I go like, name three black characters out of the Batman franchise. Go ahead, I'm waiting. What you just did right there, what Captain just did right there, that is the problem with DC. Okay?
We have Batwing. And, you do have Batwing. That's a new character, though.
That's a new character. But I'm just saying, you could say Orpheus, but he died during the War Games, the War Games thing, and he was they didn't even flesh him out. He died horribly under Black Mask. You think the new Spectre, who was the detective in Gotham Central, you know?
Yeah, Christmas.
But again,
yeah.
Since he became Spectre, he hasn't touched the bad side of things. That is the problem, all right? DC is more whitewashed than Marvel has ever been. And then when you have writers like Busick and Power Company who try to bring in black characters, all right, you meet resistance by fans. Like, oh, it's a new book. I don't care for this. Oh, you know, DC has been more resistant to change just because their characters are more iconic. You know, they put them up on such a pedestal, such a level that, oh, we don't really need to show serious diversity. You know, that's how some of their fans think, right? With Marvel, and this is what's my problem with Marvel, especially the X universe, because I look across the families of Marvel, and you have some hint of diversity, but to an extent, the Marvel X universe for a long time held on to that DC standard where, oh, diversity, we got Storm. Okay, she's probably the most unblack black person ever by her facial features. You know? Go like, can we get more? That's also why sometimes when it comes to diversity in DC and Marvel, I take the stance of Everett from Generation X, who you first meet, a young black male, all right, during the whole Phalanx Covenant. You first meet him, there's a bunch of cops with guns around him, all right, and he's standing with his arms crossed, and he's like, okay, so all you got guns pointing at me. You don't notice that some people in your group is already changing into monsters, yet your guns are pointed at me. And then when Banshee confronts him later, oh, so finally the X-Men grace my hood. You guys do your things all over there. I know several mutants, but you finally come to the hood. You know, that, and often ways, whenever we talk about diversity with the Big Two, I have that type of opinion because we've been here all the time. You just need to craft stories with us being involved. You know, that's been the major thing. That's why I love Dark Horse. That's why I love Dynamite. That's why I love Image, because they're not afraid to go and deep in into some of the tropes. Okay, to go into other societies, other faces, and tell stories, crafted using their heroes, of course, but not afraid to, okay, I'm going to use a dated reference, to go there. You know, it's oftentimes you get the thing of, well, you know, at Wakanda, a fictional country, we it won't seem believable. A black mutant, oh, I don't know if we can write that because we don't have black writers. You know, where their excuses become worse.
Well,
Darryl,
we only got about 4 minutes remaining. Are there any more black, I mean, you know, we could talk about the Asian Dr. Midnight. I'm sorry, Dr. Light.
Are there any?
No, but I'm talking about black female. Because you got Green Lantern, you have Black Lightning.
Like I said, I brought up Skyrocket with Power Company, but again, you got to think hard. You know, you got Steel's daughter, who had powers for a short time with the relaunched Infinity Inc. But again, after that, you're thinking hard. That's the problem with DC's with us. That's their problem right there.
Well, one thing I want to mention though, because you go online, you can see this and websites discussing this, blogs, and they do have. There was somebody that was actually able to quantify this. They actually said that Marvel nudges DC a little bit. Because what they're doing now is they're saying that DC actually has a hold on the LGBT community, that they have a lot more. I think they've actually shored up what they consider to be diverse with the gay stuff. Maybe more than Marvel. But when it comes to minorities, they're lacking. But, they were able, and when you factor women, gays, and minorities, racial minorities, ethnic minorities, then the two appear to be somewhat equal, although Marvel edges them out. I will say this much. We have the Mighty Avengers. We actually have a black Avengers team for all intents and purposes. So I don't know. But I just know it bothered me that I'd like to make this sneaker. I'd like to customize another pair of Chucks, and I don't know if I could do a fair job.
Well, hey,
and for our audience, go to punkyourchucks.com to check out the Black Avengers sneakers that I had customized.
Again, it's
Captain,
something
about
two, they need to work
I'm
on.
I'm sorry, we got about 2 minutes. Captain, your thoughts? Marvel versus DC, diversity?
Marvel all the way with more diversity. That's it. Marvel all the way with all more diversity. DC, take the loss every time.
And for that website that says that, okay, the most popular LG transgender couple out there is a Marvel couple. Why? Because the former popular couple was Apollo and Midnighter from the Authority, and DC wiped that out with the New 52. Good luck with that. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
All right, Dow, these things go so quickly. I feel like we just barely touched the surface on the topics, but Grindhouse Saturdays, for some reason, they go very quickly. We appreciate support. We'll do it again next week. We'll get into it a little bit deeper. Folks, we're expecting Ms. Rachel DeCoste from Canada to discuss black and being Canadian. That should be pretty interesting. That's coming up in a few moments. Captain, let's get on up out of here. It's been real. Daryl, we'll see you next week. Let's do it again.
Enjoy, folks.
And stay tuned. Stay tuned. Go next door.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Please, he's going to tell black people what to do.
He recites some history.
Please, all these gangster rappers telling black people with college educations what to do. That doesn't strike you as odd?
Okay, so you're saying that lower class blacks have the upper and middle class in check.
You know it. You'd get called Uncle Tom in a second if you went against the kind of agenda they set. Right? I mean, I'm not saying be white, but this tough guy stuff is not exactly your Stanley Kaplan formula for success. Imagine if white people were dictated to by white trash. We'd all live in trailer parks, and West Virginia would be the most populous state.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lot of...
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. Once again, this is the second half. Part due. This is AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. AfroNerd Radio. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Listen, we're expecting motivational speaker, software engineer, Ms. Rachel DeCoste. She should be coming through momentarily. She is from Canada, and she's also of color, of African descent. And as of late, the Internet, those on the Internet who do their business on the Internet, we have we're seeing more discussions on race from a gentleman by the name of Orville Douglas who said, I hate being a black male. He wrote this piece, and now everyone is upset about it. So Ms. DeCoste is going to shed some light on what it means to be black and Canadian. So it should be pretty interesting. She'll be coming up momentarily. Let's go to a quick groove, folks. We do what we do here, give you the best of Afropunk, psychedelic soul, black rock, you name it, we got it, classic groove. Let's go to this jam. Speaking of classic groove, this is Bernard Wright, Habaglabo Tribbin. I hope I said that right. Habaglabo Tribbin. We'll be right back, and again, This is Supreme Groove. We'll be back in a few moments.
Thank you.
Habo Globo Tribben, Bernard Wright. It makes you wonder, how does Dr. Dre get his checks? That's a Dr. Dre groove. Didn't really do that much to it. I'm just saying. Okay, folks, again, this is AfroNerd and AfroNerd Radio. And I could not do the show without any kind of efficacy, without my partner in white-collar crime. Captain, you are needed on the holodeck. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
So let the cipher begin. Thank you, thank you, thank you very much, thank you very much, Sir Afroner. Thank you.
Yes, again, folks, we're expecting Ms. Rachel DeCoste from Canada. She'll be coming up momentarily. And I'm intrigued about what she has to say. There's an article courtesy of the Huffington Post. Just simply go to Huffington Post Canada or just Google Huffington Post Rachel DeCoste. And it's a piece on being black and Canadian. And I'm intrigued, folks, because historically, and we'll get into this, historically from what we know to be in the Americas, in the United States, during chattel slavery, African-American chattel slavery, the triangular slave trade, Canada was the place to be. You know, if you were lucky enough, if you were lucky enough to escape, perhaps courtesy of Ms. Harriet Tubman, you would be expected to go to the north and to the northern region, or you would most definitely go to Canada. So we always, you know, for folks in the States, we always had this perception that Canada was this safe haven for black folk and that it was a place where you could escape prejudice and it was, you're kind of considered to be a free spirit. So I'm a bit confused to hear about, you know, the racial animus in Canada. So I think, you know what, Captain? I think I see her in our studio windows. You like how I do that, Captain, right? I think I see Ms. DeCoste coming up. Ms. DeCoste?
Hello?
Hello, welcome to AfroNerd Radio.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Of course, I am Desmond D. Burt, a.k.a. the Afro Nerd, and, of course, my partner in white-collar crime. Emphasis on white-collar crime. is Captain Kirk. Captain, meet Ms. DeCoste.
Hello, Ms. DeCoste.
Lovely to meet you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Listen, we had you on the show because – actually, because not just because of your article, because of Mr. Douglas. Orville Douglas wrote this piece, and from my understanding, he will even say he had difficulty having it published in Canada because of your country's reticence of discussing race. So I'm intrigued. What is your opinion on Mr. Douglas? I'm going to find the actual interview. You did a brief interview with Don Lemon, CNN's Don Lemon, about
That's
this article.
Right.
But I want to hear from you. What were your impressions of what he was saying, and did it resonate with you, or just what was your opinion about him?
I definitely. So the article was called "Why I Hate Being Black," and the title is a little bit provocative, and perhaps that was on purpose. But it narrates how his life is as a black man in Toronto, Canada's largest and most multicultural city. You know, sometimes people assume things about him because he's tall and he's black. He should be good at basketball. He should like a certain type of music, like rap and hip-hop. Some people don't want to sit next to him in public transit. And the article talks about how that makes him feel as a human being when he's being ostracized or when prejudices are being thrust upon his person. So I identified with it a little bit. Not as a, obviously, I'm not a black man, and I feel like as a woman, we're subject to less prejudice than black men are. But, you know, some people did assume I should be good at basketball because I was black. Some people are surprised that, you know, maybe I'm educated and I speak multiple languages, and they sort of – I remember as a child that some teachers didn't have much aspirations for me because of my race. So it's true that there is prejudice in our country, that Canada is not as perfect as we want it to be yet. And, you know, it was a courageous thing to write because it's not a subject that makes people comfortable, especially in my country. I'm not surprised that he couldn't get it published. I myself have written a lot about race and prejudice in Canada, and I never, ever, ever got published a single time in any mainstream media, not once. The only subjects I got published in letters to the editor were related to women's rights or language rights. You know, Canada is a bilingual country. We have the French and the English, and sometimes we have verbal quarrels. So those subjects were okay, but race was just not something that they wanted to publish. And it wasn't until the Huffington Post Canada came along that I had a voice.
Okay. Afro Nerd, are you there?
Yes. Oh,
maybe
you're
still looking for the article.
Sorry about that.
Yes. All right.
No. To be fair to Mr. Douglas, I want to play a quick clip, and then I want to delve a little bit deeper into what he was talking about. But this is a quick clip of the interview with Mr. Lemon, CNN's Don Lemon, and Orville Douglas, and then we will unpack after this quick clip. Could you hold on just one moment, Mr. Costa?
No problem.
Okay, just get into this clip. Hold on.
We're going to talk about a controversial issue here right now, okay? So sit down and listen to this. I read this earlier in the week and was intrigued by it. A writer for The Guardian says he hates being a black man. I want to read some quotes from Orville Lloyd Douglas. He writes, "I can honestly say I hate being a black male. I just don't fit into a neat category of the stereotypical views people have of black men. In popular culture, black men are recognized in three areas: sports, crime, and entertainment. I hate rap music, I hate most sports, and I like listening to rock music such as PJ Harvey." So I want to bring in the author right now. His name is Orville Lloyd Douglas. He joins me in Toronto. I guess you can call it self-hatred. Who do you blame for your self-hatred?
I would say that I think it manifests from society, I would say.
When I read through all of that, and you're saying you hate being a black man, do you hate being a black man, or do you just hate the stereotypes about black men?
I hate the stereotypes about black men. There's in pop culture, there the stereotypical image of a black male is to be aggressive, is to be arrogant, is to not be a nice person. And I just feel like as though there are a lot of black males out there, such as myself, who don't conform to those sexist and racist stereotypes.
Do you really not want to be black anymore? Is that what you're saying?
No,
if
I'm
you
not
could
saying...
change it, if you could change it, would you change it to some other race? Would you be white? I mean, what are you saying here?
No. No, what I'm saying is that you have to remember that I'm a Canadian. I'm not
right.
an American. And you have to remember that in Canada, there are less than 1 million blacks in Canada. Canada is a very Eurocentric country. I mean, the image of Canada people have is of hockey, Molson beer, cold winters. You know, people, black Canadians, we're kind of like at the margins of Canadian society. It's not like the United States where there are African Americans make up 12% of the United States population, And there's close to 40 million blacks in the United States. The total population of Canada is only 33 million. So when you grow up in a country where you don't really see a lot of positive images about black people, it does affect you. And that's why, that's where I'm coming from when I wrote the article.
Hmm. Gosh, I could talk to you all night because in a way I understand what you're saying about the stereotypes about being black. Shouldn't that push you to learn more about yourself and to love yourself more? I understand the stereotypes, and even coming from other black people, they expect you to be a certain way, right? And when you don't fit into that category, then all of a sudden you're not black, which is...
Okay, we're going to stop it here. Mr. Koss, what's your opinion about him? You know, he goes into a little bit about what Canada is about with beer and hockey, and it's overwhelmingly Eurocentric. Is he correct in that? What did he say that you would disagree with, or would you disagree with anything?
I kind of agree that Canada is more Eurocentric than is America. I think from the outside looking in, we're similar countries, but when you live here, you realize that it's not the same. I think African Americans make up something like 13% of the population, that you're not some kind of a transitory people, that you're full citizens of America. And blacks are not quite as present in Canada. I disagree with him in one thing. He mentioned that he doesn't see that many positive role models. I would change that to say that we don't see any role models at all. There's so few. You can count them in one hand. So, you know, you have Martin Luther King, for example. You have boulevards all over the place. Every time I go to some American city, there's a MLK Boulevard somewhere. There are statues of your civil rights leaders. Our struggle was the same as yours, so we came out of slavery just like Americans did, and we had our civil rights leaders who fought and risked their lives for us to have our civil rights, but ours aren't part of the historical curriculum. There are no statues to salute them. And so it's hard to get attached to that when you don't see your story told anywhere. So I kind of agree with him in that. And although it is Eurocentric, it's also different in the way that we have different minority groups, and they're a lot smaller. So Canada is 3% black, 3% Chinese or Asian, 3% South Asian. So they're small groups. And it makes for a more diverse kind of landscape, but it's a different dynamic than America, where it seems like you have, you know, black Americans, Latino Americans, a few others, and those are strong groups. When you have 12% of the population, that's a big number of people. When you're just under a million, it's harder to punch above your weight. It's just harder.
Captain, I'm sure you have some questions. I think I interrupted you, unfortunately. Sorry about that, Cap.
It's all right. It's okay. One heavy question, and rather simple. Now, AfroNerd and myself, we've discussed this behind the scenes many a time, so I'm going to pose this question to you.
Okay.
Why can't black people have an honest conversation with white people pertaining to race? Because before you answer it, let's understand something. We have not had that conversation here in America. We've had the mentions, but we have not had the honest conversation. I just want your opinion on that. Expound upon that for me.
I kind of disagree with you, perhaps because I'm Canadian. It feels like America has had way more honest conversations about race than I could ever dream of in my country. Whether it's the Trayvon Martin incident that opened up that discussion in many spheres of activity, and I could list a bunch of others, it's actually, you discuss it. You know, you discuss how stop and frisk is unfair in New York City and other cities. We haven't quite gotten there yet. And when we do talk about it, it's in timid ways. So I'm sitting here jealous of you guys, honestly.
Well, I think what the captain was getting into, and again, he's correct, we were talking about this behind the scenes, what we do in America is we exclaim we have to talk about race. We need to we say we need to have a conversation about race, but we never have that conversation. What happens is, how it is, you may be interpreting it differently, but how it is here is that both sides spew out their beliefs, but they don't necessarily come together to discuss, you know, where there may be agreement and where there may be disagreement. It's more about, this is the black opinion, and you might hear that, and then this is the white opinion, and you might hear that. And then even within there, you have the black community in America. One of the things that we're fighting against in this country is the monolith, that we're one unified group. There are so many different distinctions within the African-American experience. Like, for instance, the fact that this show is called Afro Nerd is part of that, because we try to discuss things more intellectually. We talk about pop culture. We talk about pulp culture. We talk about we play different kinds of music here. We play Afro punk. Hopefully we'll be interviewing some folks that represent the black rock spectrum next week. So in this country, it is overwhelmingly a perception, an overwhelming singular perception on the black thought process. So I think, again, it's kind of a hidden joke that everyone says we need to talk about race, but no one actually ever does it.
I'm surprised to hear that. You know, you have
even
a president who talks
that.
About race. I remember when he was running and he had to talk about his mother or his grandmother, how he had a white grandmother. You know, Obama had a whole speech about race that was nationally broadcast. I don't know. I felt like that was I was jealous that you had a president that was willing to talk about it. I really was. You're
well,
right.
Well, let me tell you how.
Insane.
Well, let me tell you how. Let me tell you how that works. His infamous race speech that was held in Philadelphia, I think in 2008, when he was running for president.
That's right.
He had to do that. He was being cornered because of his affiliation with Reverend Wright. So, you know, in this country, they thought Reverend Wright, I should say, a fair number of white folk who were not accustomed to a black church, especially that kind of black church, they didn't want him to be affiliated with. He had to disavow his connection to Reverend Wright.
Yeah.
That's number one. So he had to do that race speech because of his connection to a profound black church, a real black church, if I'm putting real in quotes. So he had to do that speech for that purpose. And any time President Obama tries to go into a racial discussion, he gets critiqued heavily. You have to hear what people say about him. And some black folk feel that he doesn't speak enough, that he has to be pressured into doing that. And when he does it, it doesn't go over well. When he spoke about Trayvon could have been my son, or Trayvon
that
could have been me 35
heart.
Years
that
ago.
That was great.
Great from your perspective, great for many black folk. But the other side thought that a president shouldn't speak that way. They want this president not to address race. So when he does go into these things, it's a lot of pressure, and it doesn't go over well. Even with Henry Louis Gates, Dr. Henry Gates from Harvard, if you remember that, the infamous beer summit. That was something that he didn't necessarily want to go to. When he was asked at a press conference about the police officer acting rather stupidly, once he used the term "police acted stupidly," he caught hell. So we never have comfortable conversations. More about you make statements and you hope they go over well. But an actual meeting of the minds, an actual nationwide beer summit, I don't think we've seen that yet.
That's true. And I could add to say that those conversations are never comfortable. I don't think the goal should be to have a comfortable conversation. But you're right. Maybe they could delve a little bit more into it and have a to and fro, not just a one comment that's out there in hopes that it makes people think. I could say, however, that race is always part of the conversation just by having Obama present somewhere. So even without saying it out loud and addressing it, by his mere presence, race is an issue. So sometimes talking about it is a bit redundant, and that might be why he hasn't had to speak out as much, notwithstanding the fact that it's negatively received by, you know, the right and the Fox News crowd. But maybe I should, you know, rethink my view on your conversations, but you're still light years ahead of Canada. And another thing you said that was kind of interesting, you mentioned that African Americans aren't a monolithic community. I guess our perception up north is that you are at least way more than we are. For Black Canadians, the 900,000 of us that are here, half of us are born abroad, half of us are born here. Those who are born abroad, there's been an influx of African immigrants for the past 20 years. So those are people from Africa who came willingly, not through slavery. And the other half, most of them are from the Caribbean, so there's other, you know, cultural references there. And many African Canadians call themselves Bajan Canadian, Haitian Canadian, Jamaican Canadian, you know, Nigerian Canadian. So we're even more diverse than it feels like the African Americans are, and that might be one of the reasons why it's harder for us to kind of get together and act as a community together, because we're so different. But I was surprised to hear that you're so diverse in the States, because it feels like, from the outside looking in, it feels like African Americans speak with one voice, or maybe two or three voices, but there's a unifying kind of a movement that I don't see in my country. I wish I saw it.
Well, we have some callers. I want to field these calls as well. But I will say this, that I think it's not really being, as far as the issue of diversity within Black people or among Black people, it's not really being promoted enough. And I think that we need to see that. In some ways, I have an affinity for there to be tribalism, for there to be a sense of all of us being together, but what's happening with some of our young Black folk, with some of the more dysfunctional aspects of what's happening to African Americans, I think part of that is because we don't see enough of a diverse view, that you don't have to do this, you could do that. You could be Black 100 or 1,000 different ways. So it can be very dangerous, I think, very dangerous if we are perceived as a singular unit. Sometimes that can be to our detriment. So that's a part of the reason why we have an Afro. It's a weird thing. Let's go to the calls. We have a lot of people who want to speak with you and open up. It's going to be a busy night. So hold on. One
I'm
moment.
Ready.
Let's go to 678. 678, welcome to Afro Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Hello, how you doing? My name is Messier. I'm calling from Atlanta.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Because
I've lived a couple of places, I think I'm going to be able to help this conversation, this meeting of the minds. Having lived in Seattle, Vancouver, Romania, and England, and now back here in America, I can attest to this one sad, bitter pill. For us as Americans, as you guys were just talking about, we don't realize when we're winning. And we are in this perpetual state of looking for absolution when we already have it, and we just basically need to go to the next step of us. Let me give you an example. When the lady was speaking a moment ago about looking from the outside in, when I was living abroad, I had a better view, because in Canada, for example, where I was, people are just Canadian first, for the most part. Now, when you're born and raised there, I'm quite sure you get a different experience, but people, for the most part, are Canadian first. And anytime anybody comes together in blackness or even urban mindset, they look at, okay, we're together, period. They don't get into the light black that much, per my experience. But when we come back here to America, we have, unfortunately, this perpetual open-ended conversation on top of open-ended on top of open-ending. So I can see why maybe for her view, as it was mine when I was living outside of America, it was too much of a constant, let's talk again, let's talk again. When I personally think if men would do as many other cultures do, glorify and perpetuate their sons and so on to excellence, as Asians and Indians and all these other people do, then I think that there would
absolutely
be a result ending to this perpetual American conversation. We want to be heard, because I see the gay people with the same thing. And I'm going to wrap it up by saying this. When you're outside of America, using gay people as an example, they want their rights or whatever too, but they are not in this perpetual thing of, well, not all the time, in this perpetual thing of acknowledge me 24/7, acknowledge me, acknowledge me. They empower themselves in their own little community. They make sure their dollar rotates around. And even when I was in Vancouver, the parts that were black, or even over in Winnipeg, the parts that were black, they made sure their money circulated amongst each other before it left out of the community. If black Americans would do that, this constant, please white man hear us, please white man see us, you know, it would not exist. And the issues with Obama wouldn't exist, because we would be so Italian strong, so Polynesian strong, that if we spoke up against Obama, they would be in fear that they would never see the light of day for an election. But because we are in this perpetual, I want to talk about it again for the 130th time, we never see the power that she is speaking of in black Canada, which I think will happen at some point in time, where they're going to be Canada first, black second, and all their other stuff later, you know. But that's just my thought from living on the outside for a while.
Well, listen,
what you said is very profound, and you've definitely called the right show, because I don't want to have the conversation, honestly. I mean, I'm telling you how we feel, how we operate here at AfroNerd. The dysfunctional part that's occurring, I can't say for Afro-Canadians, but I can say for African-Americans, it's gotten to such a level that we can't even have the conversation until we deal with what you're talking about.
Right.
I referenced Dr. Gates, and I would advise our listenership to check out his recent PBS special. He goes into some of the things we did during the 1920s, 1930s. We actually had it. Sir, we actually had it right at one point, even under apartheid in this country, with the famous Black with the Black Wall Street, with the Tulsa before the Tulsa, Oklahoma bombing. The Tulsa, Oklahoma business district was circulating and recirculating money 26 times in the black community in 1920.
But it's always a jealous black person who comes in and helps somebody from the outside to cripple us. It's always a jealous black person who kills a Malcolm X. It's always a jealous black person who doesn't protect the Martin Luther King, is actually out sleeping somewhere. It's always one of those scenarios. Until we stop that, and I'm going to back up off the call by leaving you with this. This is relevant. There's a rapper called Cool Chief or Keith or what have you. He's 17 years old.
Chief Keith.
Yeah.
He's a minstrel.
This guy is a 17-year-old kid who slept with a 30-year-old woman, okay? The court has forced this little young kid to pay this 30-year-old woman child support. As long as we're strong enough not to stop these type of stupid laws that are mainly against us as brothers, this stuff will keep going. And you'll keep having these Black Wall Streets be destroyed, because it's always one jealous black person trying to cripple the whole thing for a couple of thousand. Have a good one, you guys. I'll keep listening.
Thank you. Excellent call.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Costa, we have more calls. I want to take a quick musical break, if you wouldn't mind. I can put you on hold for about 2 minutes.
No problem.
Let's take a breather, because it's getting heavy. It's getting hot in here.
It's getting heavy.
This is what Afternoon is all about. Callers, hold on. We'll be right with you in a few moments. Let's go to a quick groove. As we talk about, we try to play different kinds of music, urban alternative, black rock, Afro-punk, you name it. This would probably be herb alt groove. Let's go to this is a Nile Rodgers, actually. Nile Rodgers, Sam Smith, Jimmy Naples. This is called Together. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. We'll be right back. Let's groove. Once again, giving the best of urban alternative groove, that was Disclosure and the great Niles Rodgers, Together. Folks, you will not hear that on conventional radio. They do not play the real deal. They will give you the minstrel music like Chief Keef and that kind of stuff, but we would try to give you the difference here at Afternoon Radio. We're back, folks, with Ms. Rachel DeCoste from Canada, motivational speaker, software engineer, and she wrote a piece for the Huffington Post Canada. And I would advise our listenership to check it out. It's called Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Canada's Approach to Racism. Mr. Cox, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, terrific. What did you think about the gentleman, his view on, well, maybe we shouldn't really have the conversation to begin with. Maybe we should be more internal. I'm assuming that there are this crime and dysfunctionalism like what Mr. Douglas talked about, that make him feel shameful. Maybe we should address those issues before we talk about race. Is that something to consider?
He has a point. I don't know if I have all the solutions. I have to say, though, that our crime issue in Canada is a different scale than the American one, so I'm not sure that that's a huge issue. When you talk about gun violence in my country, we have, you know, more severe gun laws than you do in the States. But we do have an extremely high dropout rate for black boys. We have a high incarceration rate. And so there are problems. And I did like his point, if you think about the gay and lesbian community, they don't have to ask leaders to talk about them. They bring it themselves. They're strong enough on their own. They can, you know, steer the agenda on their own without hoping somebody brings it up. And that's a good point. At the same time, when you're only less than a million people in my country, less than 3%, we kind of need a voice to say that we're here before we can even, you know, move forward. So I don't know. I don't know what the solutions are, but he brought out a really good point that I hadn't thought about before.
Let's go to another call, actually. Let's open up the lines once again. 301, welcome to Afro Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's up?
Yes. Yes, thank you, D-Bird. And hello, Captain Kirk. This is
sir,
Black Achievement
USA.
Okay, thank you.
BA.
Yes. Yes, thank you for taking my call, and hello to your guests.
Hello.
Yes, I like to mention, let me start by saying this. I understand that there are 3% people of African descent in Canada, and that makes things somewhat difficult, and I understand that. But here in this country, Koreans, Jews, Chinese, East Indians, so forth and so on, they all make up their less than 3% of the U.S. population, but they are thriving here in the United States. I understand your sentiments. I really do. There were similar sentiments I heard when I was in Europe about 5 years ago in the Netherlands. You're right. African Americans have been in this country forever. You know, we've been. You know, our roots go back 500 years. You know, we're 43, 45 million strong, and you're absolutely right. You know, we appear to be, and we are quintessential Americans. Even though we call ourselves African-Americans, most black people in this country don't know anything about Africa. And to be honest with you, we don't even like Africans. Okay, that's the truth. But if you look at what really makes America hum, that's what you got to look at. You know, not the cosmetics, not the image. Cause I know you look at Oprah, Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, and so forth and so on. If you look at what makes America hum, look at America's corporate life. Let's take one sector of corporate America. Let's take the high-tech Silicon Valley, Oracle, Apple Computers, Sun Microsystems, Intel, Microsoft, all of that, you know, major industry. African Americans are pretty much nil in those industries. You go into banking on Wall Street, the large banking houses all the way up to the top four banking houses all the way down to the small homes houses. Banking houses. We're not being called upon to make meaningful contributions in this country. You mentioned the education, no attainment in Canada. Well, there was a time when I was growing up in Detroit in the 1970s. Toronto was far behind the city of Detroit in terms of economic development, in terms of being a cosmopolitan city and whatnot. Now Detroit is bankrupt, you know, and that's largely in part to do with the lack of African Americans to make meaningful advancements economically in this country. So I understand what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. Socially, we can talk about certain things. Of course, those things, we never get any resolution. For example, out of the Trayvon Martin, nobody can tell me how was that ever resolved, because it didn't stop what happened to the young lady outside of Detroit, you know, who was shot on someone's porch, you know, and that, you know, they had to be another outcry to have that charges brought in that case. So you're absolutely right, but there are other aspects about America where African Americans are sort of missing in action that I think are important. Thank you, D-Bert. I appreciate it.
As always. Thank you, B.A. Mr. Costi,
can I just add to that a little bit?
Oh, yeah,
I want to take this opportunity, just because I know I have a lot of African-Americans listening, among Canadians also. I give a shout-out to you on my Twitter feed.
Thank you.
But just so you guys know, the first ship that came to Canada in 1603, I believe, with Champlain was the head of that ship, a Frenchman. It included a black person. It was an African. He was the translator. He's the first person to make contact with Native Americans. He spoke multiple languages. And he was a key to founding our country that's Canada today. His name was Matthew DaCosta. So in many ways, blacks have been part of my country from the beginning, from the very first ship that came. Even though we were a small percentage of the population, a black man is the father of British Columbia, which is a province that includes Vancouver. He's the guy who founded the province. There was a black mayor in the early 1900s or 1800s. So we've been here for a long time in small numbers, and maybe part of the conversation I just want to add to is that we didn't just all come off the boat, you know, since the 60s. We'd been there since the beginning, and although it's not in the history books as much as it should be, and it's not talked about, and people just assume that you just got off the boat, we have been here from the get-go. We helped build this country, and it's unfortunate that that it's not recognized.
I was about to say, those facts are somewhat lesser known in your country. I mean, you were talking about as if there really aren't points of reference for the common black Canadian. Is that something that you think that needs to be more high profile? I mean, the history is one thing. I mean, that's something that we have to deal with as well in this country. But in Canada, if I'm getting what you're saying, you think there should be more emphasis on black Canadian contribution, as well as perhaps in the present day, more high profile Canadians who are of African descent? Do you think that might kind of ameliorate certain things?
That would be my dream. I think a lot of these young Canadians that get lost a little bit, especially the immigrant groups, who are a little bit in between two cultures. They're not quite Canadian because they're always asked where they're from and their culture is different. And they're not quite, you know, Nigerian because their parents left that town. A lot of them have trouble identifying as Canadian, partly because they feel like they're the first person here. They don't really know that they have a strong history here. And knowing that, you know, an African guy was the first guy to make contact with the Native Americans, that you're not the first one to struggle with this, and other people have succeeded, and you can too, is this huge, huge booster. And that's missing from our curriculums. It's missing from our national conversations, and it definitely contributes to lower self-esteem of black Canadians, especially boys. So in my dream, that would be a part of just the common knowledge that we should have. Not only would it help young kids growing up, but I think it would also help non-black kids kind of see blacks as an integral part of our society. And I have to say that, you know, I'm born in our nation's capital, Ottawa, born and raised. I went to public school. I didn't know about most black Canadian history until after university, and I started studying on my own. And I think as a child, it would have meant a lot for me to know that I wasn't the first person to go through these obstacles of being the only black person around and having to, you know, to forge ahead alone. And it's definitely missing in Canada. And that's one thing I like about America. You seem to celebrate your heroes. Even the recent PBS special, Many Rivers to Cross, you know, I'm dying for that special to have a Canadian version. We have so many stories to tell, and they remain untold, mainly. They remain untold, unknown, and I would love for that to change. And to conclude, I think that one of the things that divide us are our diverse black Canadian population, that's Jamaican Canadian and Haitian Canadian, Bajan Canadian, and all these different origins. I think it would be a unifying force if we would celebrate our black Canadian heroes and identify with them. Many times I hear immigrant groups talk about black heroes that are from that foreign country where their parents are from. That's who they can identify with because they don't know about the Canadian ones. So it would help so many ways if we saluted the people who came before us and founded, you know, the society that we love.
I will say this, and I appreciate what you just said. I think that was very integral. But I guess Drake isn't doing it for you, obviously. That's only Canadian we know. I guess he's not doing it for you. But
it was coming.
But I will say this. You know, we had segregated sports in the Americas. And my understanding, you know, we think of hockey as being such a white sport, but there was a black hockey league that originates from Canada. Is that correct? Were you aware of that?
Yes. Before the NHL league, there was a black hockey league out in the Maritimes, so the Nova Scotia area, which is ironically also where there's a lot of black people who were once runaway slaves or escaped slaves, who came, a lot of them came in the 1800s, and they founded their own hockey league. It was segregated, and they definitely made their mark. I don't know if that story is well known in the rest of the hockey world, which is very, very, very white, but definitely we have our stake in hockey also. We have our heroes, and they deserve to be known also.
Yeah, I think there's a documentary called Black Ice that kind of encapsulates
like
what you're talking about. So I think that's very important. Ms. DeCoste, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. We appreciate you coming through. We've got to get you back. I will stay tuned to any other articles that you write that, obviously you know how to write rather provocatively. So if you write anything else, we'll try to keep in touch, but we really appreciate you coming through. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for giving us a room in your venerable show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Folks, that was Ms. Rachel DeCoste from Canada. All right, Captain, we got about eight minutes remaining. I think we should go to a groove, and then when we get back, if we have enough time, we might touch on Dinesh D'Souza and his funky behind. See, it never stops. You know, Ms. DeCoste, you know, she was talking about the Americas and I guess the perception of what we're doing here. And even with our president, you know, he's called the Trayvon. You know, you have a noted conservative intellectual, and I'm conservative, you know, but hey, I call out people when they're wrong. And Dinesh D'Souza calls Obama Trayvon in the White House. So, you know, when we speak up, it doesn't go too well. You know, our presence doesn't go too well. It's not that conversation, I don't know if we should have it. I'm just saying. All right. All right, this is another new jam, folks. This is by an artist by the name of Allie. Not Too Hard in the Eyes, Allie. And this is Cross My Mind, Cross My Mind, another new jam. We'll be back, and let's groove.
Some be bad, dirty, dirty, always wanting what you can't have. I don't care to be your latest conquest, but the way you got me going has me more than impressed. I am right, and he wants to take a bite. His poison in my veins feels like a lullaby. It lays me down. He lays me down. It didn't really cross my mind till I saw the way he was moving. Even then it took some time. Play a go. Told me I should shut to my heart, but your mouth said go, so I took it back, yeah, I took it far. No escaping, he'll be leaving me with new scars. Get the player, play tall, but he doesn't finish what he starts. My magician disappearing is divine. Didn't really
Obama is so outside our comprehension that only if you understand Kenyan anti-colonial behavior can you begin to piece together his actions. That bit of science was dropped by one Newton Leroy Gingrich in a 2010 interview with the National Review. The inspiration for Newt's piercing insight into our president? Well, it came from this guy, Dinesh D'Souza, prolific conservative writer, armchair psychoanalyst, and diviner of Mau Mau revolutionary transference through a single meeting between a Kenyan father and his Hawaiian-born son. After resigning his position as president of the Christian King's College here in New York last October, Mr. D'Souza stormed back into our national consciousness this week via Twitter. Here's his Thanksgiving wish. I am thankful this week when I remember that America is big enough and great enough to survive grown-up Trayvon in the White House. That, of course, was meant to be an insult to a president who outraged the right by stating the obvious fact that if he had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin, and that 35 years ago, he could have been Trayvon, the black teenager who was shot and killed by a stranger in Sanford, Florida in February 2012, an incident, which I should add, for which the shooter was acquitted by a jury. But Mr. D'Souza's tweet, which I'm sure he thought was quite clever before he deleted it, can only have been an insult if you're one of those people on the right who, for some reason, decided that they really, really hated Trayvon Martin, that he was Trey gone, that he needed to be put down like a rabid dog, that because his death could even potentially cause people to question the proliferation of guns and the profiling of young black men in our society, that he couldn't just be a shooting victim. He had to be evil. He had to be hated. He had to be vilified and mocked, much like some on the right hate and vilify and mock President Obama. But to Trayvon Martin's parents, the D'Souza sideswipe was especially cruel because of what they must have hoped could have been. For one thing, unlike Barack Obama, Trayvon Martin had an involved father. His mom enrolled him in horseback riding lessons and flight training school and a really good high school. And yes, he got into some trouble, like a lot of teenagers do, which is why his mom sent him to Sanford with his dad in the first place, to get him back on track, in the hope that one day their son could be like Barack Obama, who has admitted getting into some trouble as a young man, but whose family did everything possible to keep him on track. Mr. D'Souza, Trayvon Martin growing up to be like Barack Obama was exactly his parents' plan. And preventing her precious black son from winding up like Trayvon Martin was Barack Obama's mother's triumph. So indeed, I am thankful this Thanksgiving that this country is big enough and great enough to survive the thoughtless, ugly haters and to work toward ensuring that all of our Trayvon Martins have the opportunity to grow up to be Barack Obama. Happy Thanksgiving, Dinesh.
All right, folks, we've got about a minute or less. We will extrapolate, pontificate, and wax perhaps on Wednesday's Midweek and Review show, maybe. I thought that that piece from MSNBC was rather succinct, so maybe I might not have to say anything anymore on that. Captain, any thoughts before we head on out?
Well done. I think we had a very good show today.
You know, nothing special. This is what we do. That's what we do. Okay, folks, enjoy the holiday. Still more festivities to come. Anyway, let's go on out on a classic groove. This is Willie Bobo, Fried Neck Bones at Home Fries. See you on Wednesday.